At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, F1 Explains listeners, it's Christian here. Now, before we get into this week's episode, we have a bit of exciting news. F1 Explains Live is heading to the British Grand Prix. Yes, we're doing a live show on stage at the British Grand Prix next week. And if you've got a ticket for the race weekend, you'll be able to come and see us and our special guest on Saturday the 6th of July at 5:20 in the evening on the massive main stage at Silverstone. Now, if you're going to be there, email us f1explains@f1.com. We might be able to answer your question on the show and maybe even make you a part of it. So that is F1 Explains Live, 5:20 in the evening, Saturday the 6th of July on the main stage at Silverstone. See you there and enjoy this week's episode.
F1 Explains. This is the official F1 podcast that explains some of the more complicated, perhaps unusual, or maybe even intriguing parts of the sport. I'm Katie Osborne. Alongside me is Christian Hugill.
Hello, Katie Osborne. And if you've got a question that you would like to get answered on F1 Explains, you can, of course, send us an email. The address is f1explains@f1.com. You can write words if you like, but we always prefer a voice note.
We love them. And Christian, we've never really opened an F1 Explains episode quite like this before, but do you mind explaining where we are?
We're at the Canadian Grand Prix, but normally if we're at a race, me and Katie will record in the paddock, or when I was in Miami, was in the pit lane, yeah, the safety car episode, you know, but this is completely unusual. We are in the tent that travels around the world with Formula One to feed F1 staff. So what we can see is a great big white... Is tent the best word for this, Katie?
I'd say it's a tent, but it's like an enclosed tent with like windows on one side,
yep,
that are totally... And it's like hard, like there's not a floppy tent. This
is not
one that would get caught in a windstorm.
No, and believe you me, at Canada it has to cope with all weathers, as we've seen this weekend.
Hail today.
Hail, sun... But this tent, I love it in here because it's really weird. So it feels like a room. So in my mind, this is the room where F1 staff members like us get food over a race weekend. Feels like I'm in a room, but a room that travels around the world. I've sat in this room in Miami.
This is what I was going to say. That's why I like this room too, is it's like going to your grandma's house and you always know where to find the cookies. That's how this is. This is the same tent. The drinks are in the same place. The desserts in the same place every single day for F1 staff members. They always know what to expect when they walked in here. And I really like that. It provides some consistency for the team members.
And yet, the tent is always in a different place. It comes with us on the F1 circus. Right. It's fantastic. The food's always great. We get looked after really well.
What did you eat for lunch today?
Now, for lunch today, I'll be honest with you. So lunch service has just finished. It's quite quiet at the moment because... we couldn't get a table earlier, so now we've got a table and lunch service has just finished. I had some chicken I very much enjoyed. Where's the sign? I had roasted chili ginger chicken.
And by the way, I read that. I ate that chicken too, and then I read the sign. I didn't read the menu before that, and I thought, I didn't know that was chili ginger chicken.
There you go. Well,
but it was really good.
It was really good, whatever it was. I had it with grilled vegetables and steamed rice, but I saw other people...
I did.
...have the spinach ricotta ravioli, which... I've got now. Would you like? Shall I taste test it?
I want you to taste test this. It was really good.
Okay. By the way, we'll tell you in a minute why we're talking about food. There is a reason we're here. Hang on.
Scale of 1 to 10. It's just so you guys have an idea. It's a little olive oil. Mm. I thought it was pesto, not spinach, but
It's really good.
Al dente. The pasta was really al dente. Hey, like this, like a little extra. There you go.
The pasta is cooked perfectly. Add a little al dente. The ricotta is creamy and lovely. You can taste the spinach. Lovely. You said 8, 9 out of 10 easy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, lovely. Excellent. Right, Katie, why are we talking about food? Okay, why am I eating ravioli on a podcast?
That nobody can see but me. I really wish y'all could see this.
Ravioli on a podcast.
The reason we are here, Christian, is a load of you got in touch with us asking questions about food. Totally logical. The cars use fuel, but what really fuels the drivers? I love this topic, by the way. So we're going to find out with the help of Dr. Dan Martin from Combine Performance. Now, he works right here in the F1 paddock as a nutritionist for Oscar Piastri at McLaren, but also as a performance coach for the team at Haas. Now, Christian, you were looking forward to this one, right?
Yeah, I was, because I've recently sort of started to pay a bit more attention to what I eat. And I'll be honest with you, Katie, I was putting on weight. I'm getting a bit older. Well,
when I saw you, I hadn't seen you since CODA of last year. In real life.
Lost a little bit.
What was one of the first things I said to you? You look trim.
Bless you. So I've become a little more conscious of what I eat. I was putting on a bit of weight. Had an operation at the back end of last year. Couldn't exercise after. Put on a bit of weight because you can't exercise.
Yep. You know. Been there, done that.
And I was like, right, I'm going to concentrate a bit more on my foods. And I've learned so much. So I was really interested to talk to a proper expert on this.
Yeah, I was glad this was a topic. And you know what? Honestly, you're not the only one interested in all of this and what F1 drivers eat. We've had loads of questions from our listeners, including this particular voice note.
Hi, Katie and Christian. This is Santiago from Medellin, Colombia. I love your podcast, and I thank you for helping us know more about F1 and its inner workings. On a previous episode, Oscar Piastri was presented with a banana smoothie mid-interview. Besides that being really funny, it made me wonder about a Formula One pilot's diet. What quirky diets do F1 pilots have? Being top-level athletes, they surely must have a very specific feeding regime, don't they? And what exactly do they eat before a race? Thanks, guys!
Yes, Oscar Piastri's banana smoothie! Okay, Christian and I, backing it up, we're talking to Oscar at CODA last year, 2023, and it was about F2, F3. And in the middle of our podcast, it didn't matter that we were talking to him, that we had his attention. Someone came in and dropped off a banana smoothie for
him. In and out, wasn't it? It was like a military operation. Banana smoothie on the desk, and I shall go.
We all didn't get a banana smoothie. Just he did.
Well, he's the F1 driver. He gets the VIP treatment.
Anyways, Oscar was drinking that because our guest, Dr. Dan, told him to. Now, sadly, I was not at this interview, unfortunately. I was flying...
You were in the sky, weren't you? Katie was literally in the air, which one day podcasting will happen.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we should do a podcast on a plane. Anyway, if we've done one eating ravioli in a canteen, we can do one on a plane.
Yeah,
but anyway,
sure.
Yeah, you weren't around.
I was on a way to another race somewhere. But let's find out what happened when Dr. Dan and Christian spoke about all things nutrition on this F1 Explains.
Dan, welcome to F1 Explains. Lovely to have you with us. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much for having me. I look forward to the questions.
That's good. We like a guest that looks forward to a few questions because we've got plenty from our listeners. They're a curious bunch, F1 Explains listeners. We've got questions on what drivers eat, why they eat it, also when they eat before a race. But before we dig into all of that, Dan, give us an overview of what you do with Oscar Piastri and also with the Haas team.
I'll start with Haas, I guess. So I am the lead performance coach, or I lead the performance coaching program that we have at Haas. The role there is to look after the race team, so the pit crew, the mechanics, the engineers. And what we provide there is physiotherapy, strength and conditioning coaching, fitness testing, jet lag strategies, all the general sports science support. And we're also there to look after the pit stop practice and performance. So it's very much a team-focused role. The role with Oscar, however, is it's the complete opposite. It's very much driver-focused. So it's very specific around nutrition. And so I am his performance nutritionist. So I work with Oscar directly, but then also with his performance coach, Kim, to create and implement a diet that I guess caters for the demands of a modern-day F1 driver.
Does that typify the sport, Dan, in the sense that some teams, it might be, we have someone who works on health and nutrition, here they are, you can use them, or do some drivers come into a team and say, this is my person, I want to work with them? Can it differ up and down the paddock?
It can. It's slightly unique to be able to sit across two different teams in the way that I do, but there is agreements in place. I think if I was working with multiple drivers across multiple teams, there'd be clear conflicts there. But I think with one role being team focused and one role being driver focused. I'm nothing to do with the car. I don't know much about the cars at all. I can't really share any secrets. So I think there's a general understanding there that there's not enough conflict for it to be an issue.
And actually, Dan, I don't need any invitation to talk about football or soccer, because it's another one of my passions. I've mentioned it before on this podcast. I probably bore Katie, my co-presenter, with it. But you also work in my second passion in soccer as well, don't you, with Southampton Football Club, which must be fascinating.
It is. It's a fantastic blend. You know, every day is different, so you can't necessarily get bored the day in, day out, having the same role. So, yeah, lucky enough, the time we're recording this, we just got promoted back to the Premier League after one season in the Championship. So it was a big day at Wembley on Sunday just gone. But yeah, thankfully now a few weeks off in the off-season, which means I can focus all my attention on F1 for a few weeks, which, yeah, depending on who's asking and when. Right now we're on the podcast, so F1 is my number one sport and soccer number two. But yeah, when it comes around to pre-season, I might have to flip that around.
We have it good, Dan, because in the winter when Formula One's not there, we can focus on the football, which is what I like to do, and it fills my sporting gap. And then when football disappears in the summer, we've got F1 races at Silverstone and things like that to keep us busy. It's lovely. Right, let's go back to Formula One then, Dan. What's the aim of a Formula One driver's diet, first and foremost?
I think I probably alluded to it in the intro. I mean, really it is to meet the needs and demands of the modern day. I'll emphasise the word or the phrase modern day F1 driver. 24 races, multiple continents. Then there's the testing, there's sort of media and partnership commitments on top of that. When I first started watching F1 as a kid, it was the days of sort of Damon Hill, back end of Nigel Mansell sort of era. And I think it was only 15 or 16 races on the calendar. So it's very, very much different. So my role as the nutritionist for any driver is to try and, I guess, meet those needs. The simple way of explaining it, I sort of think nutrition operates in almost like a three-tiered pyramid. The bottom tier is the most important. So it's a diet that looks after the driver's health first and foremost. You can't perform exceptionally well if you haven't got a solid foundation of health. So good nutrition, looking after immune function so they can actually operate across 24 plus weeks. Good gut health, good cognitive function, things like that. With that solid foundation, it means we can actively work in the gym on strength, on the track, in terms of running track, in terms of cardio, but then the technical side of it in the sim and on test events. And with that rock solid foundation of health and that work in the gym and in the sim, it means then you've got a rock solid foundation to perform in the car. So ultimately, it's eating the right stuff at the right time, in the right amounts, on the right day, and giving them, I guess, the fuel and the nutrients to deliver on whatever day it is.
And are you working with Oscar and or Haas across the course of a race weekend, or are you looking at their diets 7 days a week, 24/7, bar, I'm guessing, the odd cheat meal somewhere along the lines? I'm imagining you let them have a Christmas dinner, but is it a race weekend thing, or is it a 7 day thing?
With Oscar, with any driver, it is a 7 day thing. So the way we tend to operate is every Sunday, or sometimes it's a Monday, I'll send through that week's schedule, and then it is literally every meal for every day. And then it's a combination of the driver themselves preparing that meal and eating it, but then sometimes, certainly around the race weekend, there's a chef in play who can prepare that and deliver it for the driver to eat. So it is a 7 day operation.
And sometimes Formula One drivers will, as you say, make it themselves, I'm sure. Sometimes they'll have help with that. I did once speak to Lando Norris about a time when last winter he went to stay with Daniel Ricciardo, and the two of them tried to make eggs in the morning and failed. They failed at making eggs. They're the world's best racing drivers, but not necessarily always the world's best practically. Have you had to deal with that at any point when you give them something and they're like, I'm not sure how to do that? Because F1 drivers, they're not talented in all levels, are they?
No, they've got to be good at something. So it's a good job they are good at driving. But yeah, you do. And whether it's drivers or any other athletes, there's different levels of capability. Some love food and they love the cooking process. If we're speaking about Oscar directly, is not bad. He's pretty handy, so that helps. But where they are a nightmare and it's always going to be a cooking disaster. There are thankfully other bits of support in place. We can get private chefs, we can get like one-off chefs, we can get meal prep. If they live locally enough to me, I'd go around and gladly help. But yeah, it's sort of driver dependent, athlete dependent. But yes, as a nutritionist working across many sports, I've seen just about everything in terms of cooking ability or lack of it.
Or lack of it. Fantastic. So the big question, Dan, the big question, what do Formula One drivers eat and why? Now, I know I am asking a broad brushstroke question here, but give us a general flavour, no pun intended, of what an F1 driver's food looks like.
Yeah, I mean, sadly for the listeners, it's in my experience anyway, there's nothing that crazy or unexpected. What they do, because they are professional in every sense of the word, they're one of the most professional categories of athletes that I've worked with that really care about the details. It's just good quality and on the whole, real foods. So lots of meat, lots of fish, lots of eggs, dairy, loads of colours through fruits, veg, berries, things like that. And yeah, as I say, because they are, generally speaking, sort of data-driven creatures, when you think about all the data they deal with day-to-day from a car driving point of view, they do quite like to know the data and the details with the foods as well. But in terms of type of foods, yeah, for the main part, it's nothing remarkable. It's just good quality food. The remarkable bit sometimes is the consistency, and that is the key thing. It's making the correct, as boring as it sounds, it's making the correct choice hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of time in a row, and that's what they surprise me with quite often.
Do you have to work with a bit of a balance? Because something I was really surprised about when I started working with a personal trainer for my own, I love going to the gym, I love fitness, it's a managing mental health tool for me. When I first started working with a personal trainer, I think I realized, even though I was looking to lose weight, I was probably eating too little and I wasn't having enough energy to burn off fat, if that makes sense. Do you have similar sort of balancing acts that I guess come down to data when you're looking? Formula One drivers can't be too muscular because they've not got much space to sit in the car. They equally need food for all the energy. Is there a balancing act in a job like yours?
There absolutely is. And you'd be surprised at how often you come across exactly what you've described there, where the polite way of saying it is almost that sometimes, and F1 drivers can be guilty of this, is doing too much of the right thing almost. They know they have to maintain a certain weight for the car that's been agreed with the team and the engineers. And it's almost like to make sure they're doing it, they will do maybe a touch more exercise than they need to and not eat quite enough than what they've been requested to do to almost like double tick those boxes, but it can sort of come back and bite you. So yeah, it really is about that balancing act is exactly what it's all about. It's helping them stay between the lines of where they need to be, but it's not just drifting off in terms of overeating and under exercise. And it's actually the other way as well in terms of, no, like this is the amount I want you to eat. So if you've not eaten quite enough, I need you to eat a little bit more. As I've alluded to, your lifestyle is pretty packed. It's pretty hectic. That needs fueling adequately. It needs recovering from, particularly when you've done something that's quite exertive, whether that's a race or whether it's not. Travel, for example, takes it out of you. You need to recover from that to give your best when you get back in the car.
How many calories does an F1 driver need on race day based on what you've just said there? Because that's going to be a day that they're putting in an awful lot of energy. We've heard on previous episodes of F1 Explains where we've looked at physical fitness, the amount of fluids and water that they sweat and lose. Is there a sort of rough calories figure for a race day, for example?
This is the one question which I hoped that you wouldn't ask, because it is a finger in the air to an extent question. All of sports nutrition is a game of best estimates. And no matter how we try to quantify energy eaten through food in and energy expended through activity and movement, it's always a game of best estimates using wearable technology. So when you're in the car, the thing that makes it really difficult for us to know for certain is the effect of adrenaline, because their heart rates are so high, even though in theory to the viewer it looks like they're not doing very much. Obviously they are working hard in there, but the presence of adrenaline makes the heart rate go really high as well. And when we're trying to calculate calorie expenditure, we use heart rate as one of the main variables to calculate that. As a ballpark, this isn't necessarily accurate, but as a ballpark, we'd guesstimate it's somewhere in the region, seeing just for a region. I'd say somewhere between 3,500 to 4,000, I should think. That's probably, roughly 1,500 to 1,800 probably in the race potentially. But I say that with caution. It's not, there's no really good evidence out there to say exactly what it is.
No, sure. And remind us what the sort of recommended amount for a man or a woman is on an average day.
On an average day, these are UK-based guidelines, but it's about 2,000 for a female and around 2,500 for a male. So yeah, it's up there. I mean, on those days, on the race days, it is literally all they'll do. So before it's nice and relaxed, and after it's nice and relaxed. So that dump of ballpark 1,500 to 2,000 will come in like a 90-minute period, which is a huge exertion in a relatively short space of time.
It's fascinating. Now, one thing we know about Oscar, he's been on this podcast a few times, is he enjoys a banana smoothie. And the reason we know this is because me and Katie interviewed him in Texas, which I don't know if you've been to, Dan, but that is a hot Grand Prix. We were sat there in the baking heat outside of McLaren Hospitality. And we enjoyed, when we were doing that chat, this particular moment.
Kind of stuff prepares you very much for when you get to F1.
I do have a serious question about something, but most importantly, in F1, do you get dropped while you're having an interview what looks like a glass of milk? Did you get that in F2, F3? Is that a normal thing? What is that, by the way?
I did not. It's a banana smoothie.
Oh.
So it's
that not, is not what I would have guessed
if
that
you
is.
You notice why Katie laughed? It's because this random glass of liquid just got dropped in the middle of the interview.
And nobody else got any, by the way.
No. So did that happen in F2 and F3? Is that a difference? Do people bring you random fruit-based drinks?
That is a difference. I'm sure if I had have asked in F3 and F2, I could have got it. But now it kind of just appears in front of me.
How important is a banana smoothie to the preparation of a Formula One driver?
Very good for the soul.
Yes. Good. Love that.
Yes, that's probably, I mean, it's got nutritional benefits as well. But it's very important to keep the stomach and taste buds happy.
There you go.
I've never asked an F1 driver that question
before.
That's a new thing. I might ask it again in the future. Yeah. So that is Oscar being bought, as you've just heard, a banana smoothie, which me and Katie found quite funny that somebody just turned up with a banana smoothie when he was mid-interview. Dan, was that Oscar just having a nice drink, or was he drinking that because you told him to? What is a banana smoothie doing to help Oscar through not just an interview with us? Well, he does need help with that, but also just through a race weekend.
Yeah, banana smoothies are on the plan. So I think I'm right thinking that interview took place on a Thursday afternoon.
Good knowledge.
Yeah, well, I was on it. I knew I was coming on, so I did my research. But early on in the week, the F1 drivers, they'll do their own sort of training. But generally speaking, their levels of activity are reasonably low. So as a result, just like you'd fuel a car low when it's not going to do very much, it's just going out for a couple of laps, we fuel athletes reasonably low as well with carbohydrates. But on Thursday afternoon, with one eye on the next day, which would be Friday, so there'd be two practice sessions, the focus shifts slightly on Thursday evening to start to put some carbohydrates and fuel back into the body ahead of tomorrow. So that, coupled with the fact of the conditions on the day where it was hot, a banana smoothie is, it's a perfect solution. It's fluid in to help with the hydration. It's carbohydrate from the banana, the milk and the honey. And yes, some natural electrolytes in there as well to sort of retain that fluid. All in preparation for the 2 1-hour sessions tomorrow.
All good stuff. And you know, you said that you do Oscar's meal plan. Does that mean in theory you know what Oscar Piastri is having for dinner tonight?
I should. But don't put me on the spot because I don't have it in front of me.
Excellent. And we mentioned earlier, Dan, that you work in soccer as well, in football. I'm sure throughout your career you've come across other sports too. How is an F1 driver's diet different to other sportsmen and women?
Yeah, it is different. You'd be surprised how many similarities there are at the same time. Let's take comparison with football, seeing as you mentioned it. I mean, in theory, when you see how a week is structured, they play in theory or compete in theory once a week on a weekend. And the duration is similar to 90 minutes. So there's a lot of similarities in terms of what types of food they eat and at what time, because it's still a human body performing 90 minutes worth of activity once a week. The main difference, though, is probably in the training week. Not to do F1 drivers out of anything because they train incredibly hard. The schedule of a professional footballer, though, is a little bit more robust, a lot more running. They're running on average around 4K sort of per day. That's up and down. Some days it's closer to 3, some days it's closer to 7 or 8, plus gym. But F1 drivers obviously eat a lot more away from home. So there's variation, which sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's not, depending on how close the drivers are sticking to the script or sticking to the plan. But of course, the one thing that drivers have to do a little bit more than footballers is always have one eye, not being overly sort of obsessive about it, but one eye on their weight, just making sure it doesn't drift off too far at one point. Whereas in football, you can have a congested fixture period where the focus is just on fueling and recovery. And you can see after a maybe a 3-week period, let's take the Christmas period, which is a huge amount of games in one block. Players can actually gain weight because they're eating so much food to fuel and recover, whereas you don't have that luxury in racing. You need to sort of always sort of maintain your weight. But then if you compare it to other sports I work with, such as horse racing with jockeys, they need to be on weight every single day, and that is obsessive, sadly. So yeah, F1 drivers are somewhere in the middle. I think they've got the best of both worlds, if you ask me.
Something that I mentioned earlier, I started working with a personal trainer, and something that he said to me that I'd never really thought of before was that there's no such thing as a bad food necessarily. It's that, for example, he gives me a certain number of grams of carbohydrates to stick to a day, certain amount of protein, certain amount of fat. And he sort of said to me, look, you know, you can eat what you like. If you want to have a treat, just try and fit it into those, and maybe another meal, if you have a high fat meal, might be low in fat, for example. And as you say, data and numbers. That said, is there a food that you warn people like Oscar, your athletes, off? Is that like, that's on the naughty list, I don't want you eating that thing?
It's not ever. I guess there's always a right time for every type of food. So whether it's something that we'd consider to be, you know, sweet food or a treat food, sometimes those type of foods are perfect just before a workout, because it's gonna make your blood sugar go super high, but then we're gonna do something that's high intensity and we're gonna do a workout. It's great. Equally, we can use those as recovery tools as well. I guess it's usually wrong timing. It's not necessarily wrong foods. It's eating a certain food at the wrong time. So things that's gonna make you sluggish, or something that's gonna really elevate your blood pressure, and then you're gonna come crashing down and you're gonna feel quite sluggish just at the wrong time when we need to then do something. And sometimes it's volumes of food, because again, you're going to do something on a full tummy, you're going to feel quite sluggish. So it's not necessarily no foods or the certain foods that are completely banned. It's a case of just not eating the wrong food at the wrong time and eating the right foods at the right time. It's as simple as that. Horses for courses, so to say.
Dan, stay there. We're going to do some listener questions for you in just a second here on F1 Explains.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is F1 Explains. We are looking at Formula One drivers' nutrition this week with Dr. Dan Martin from Combined Performance. He works in the F1 paddock as a nutritionist for both Oscar Piastri at McLaren and the team at Haas. Dan, can I put some of our listeners' questions to you?
Go for it. Look forward to it.
I'm going to start with Maria in Malta, a country I love. Maria asks, does every race on the calendar have a different nutrition plan? I found that a really interesting question, Dan, because I'm guessing a circuit like Singapore, for example, that gets very hot and humid, might have different physical demands on a driver from something like Silverstone, where it might be a bit cold.
Yeah, great question, and yeah, great intuition from yourself. The answer is yes and no. The way that I tend to operate, or we tend to operate, we've sort of got like, this is with the driver, like five menus sort of on rotation. So Bahrain is menu one, Saudi is menu two, and so on we go through. So you've got a good balance there between variety, but then also consistency. We don't want 24 separate menus. We want stuff that we know is tried and tested and we trust and we like. That said, we do review those menus sort of race by race based on the country that we're in. So in terms of wholesale sourcing, but then as you've touched on there, the environmental conditions. So if it's really hot, then some of the meals that we've got planned might have been hot food. We'll switch them out for cold foods and vice versa. If it's a cold, wet day in Suzuka and we add something cold on the menu, then we'll switch it out for something hot basically accommodate for the conditions. But yeah, great question. So it's not a black or white yes or no, it's somewhere in the middle.
No, that is a good question. Maria, well done. Maria in Malta. Next to Killeen in Houston, Texas. Killeen asks, does every F1 driver have a personal chef to cook for them? I can't imagine they have much time to cook for themselves. Now, we touched upon this a little bit earlier, didn't we, Dan? But I'm guessing at the very least there's a chef on hand on race weekends for every driver.
It certainly is. I mean, I don't know when it goes to home. I don't know every driver. I'd say I doubt it. I mean, time and opportunity to cook for yourself is one of the biggest barriers that we face as nutritionists or as performance teams and performance coaches in general. But you're certainly right. On the road, usually, this is speaking from knowledge of multiple teams, drivers tend to have a chef dedicated to them. So you can ask for literally anything that you want. And then once they've serviced the driver's needs, they will then sort of muck in and help with either the rest of the team or team guests and things like that. So in terms of the personal chef, not sure, but in terms of is there a chef on hand at race weekend to deliver anything, the answer to that is yes, which is a great help, certainly not to the driver. They don't want to be thinking about cooking when they've got to jump in the car in a couple of hours, but certainly it's a big help to me as well.
Yeah, and obviously that's the same across a lot of elite level sport. We are going to go to California now to Kathy in Sacramento. She wants to know about the driver's eating routine. She says, I'm an ultra marathon runner and fueling up properly is one of the most important things I do before a race. Considerable time and thought goes into it. I imagine it's the same for drivers. So Dan, when do drivers eat before a race? Again, we did touch upon this a little bit earlier, Dan, you mentioned there that there is some food intake before a Grand Prix. So I'm guessing there's an element of what Kathy's saying, but also surely you can eat too much before a Grand Prix. We've all felt drowsy after a meal. I'm guessing you don't want to go into that territory as well. How does that work?
You're absolutely right. And great question from Kathy. I mean, we, no matter what the events, no matter what the sport, no matter the race, where it is, we always, in Formula One, we'd always work backwards from lights out. So whatever time that is, that's time zero. So let's say it's a 3 o'clock lights out in the afternoon. And we always, the last meal is always 3 hours prior to that, or roughly speaking, 3 hours. So if it's 3 p.m. lights out, that means the last main meal will be 12 o'clock noon, which falls nicely around lunchtime. But then, I guess more importantly, if we want to get a little bit of detail, we tend to go because we're fueling. So fueling is going to come from carbohydrates. So at that last meal, we're aiming to try and get 1 gram of carbohydrate for every 1 kilo that the driver weighs. So easy maths. If you're a 70 kilo driver, we're going to try and get 70 grams of carbohydrate at that last meal, 3 hours before lights out. And then there's a slightly smaller top-up window, about 45 minutes. It's sort of driver preference, somewhere between 45 and 60 minutes before. We'd go for half a gram per 1 kilo of body weight. So that'd be about 30 grams, 35 grams, something like that for a 70-kilo driver. And that could look as easy as, we've mentioned banana smoothies before. I'll say it again. It could be a banana with a little bit of peanut butter on it, and maybe an espresso or a little caffeine shot or something like that. So the not only fully fueled, but fully focused for the race.
Charlotte is in the Isle of Wight, home of producer Chris, famously. Charlotte says, does a driver's diet change on non-race weekends? And adding to that, does it ever change over the winter break when they're not racing at all? Good question again from Charlotte.
Yeah, the short answer to that is yes. So no matter what the day, no matter what the weekend or the time of year, we'll adapt the total amount of calories coming in and then the carbohydrate coming in for the fuel based on what energy demands there are. So on a non-race week and a non-race weekend, usually they'll be doing less. They'll be less active than what they are on a race weekend. So therefore we fuel them less. A little bit of insight, the day after a race. So there's a normal non-race week if people are interested. So race day plus one, so that'll always be the Monday, is still technically a bit of a high fuel day to help recover from the day before, with lots of colour in there as well. So high, antioxidant, high anti-inflammatory, high polyphenol foods to help with the recovery process. Then let's say the Tuesday, Wednesday, usually drivers will do some sort of training. So it's moderately fueled to get through these lighter training sessions. One of those days might be quite tough. So you'd not necessarily fuel high all day, but you'd fuel the session really well. And then the week might taper off. They may get 2 or 3 days off with the family. And if they're not doing too much, then obviously they'll eat plenty. They'll eat lots of protein and lots of colour, but probably less carbohydrates, because carbohydrates is the fuel. And if they're not doing anything, then there's not a great need to give them heaps of that. We'll save that for when they need it.
I'm adding on to Charlotte's question here. Is there a point at any time in the 12 months where you are able to say, like to Oscar, for example, have a week off, eat what you like? Or does that simply never happen for a Formula One driver?
No, it absolutely does. Certainly the off season. After Abu Dhabi, there's a good couple of weeks there. And I think everyone across the paddock with other drivers, it's sort of hands off. It's been a tough season. And it's like, yeah, go off on holiday with your family. And that's fine. Naturally, if you were to do a, like a longitudinal line of weight, it's nice and sort of consistent across the season. And then it'll sort of drift up in the off season. Then naturally they'll come into pre-season training. We'll make a plan with the performance coach and the physio, and then naturally over a few weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, that'll come down, chip away a little bit of time back in time for the season. So there's certainly a natural occurring window where yeah, drivers can sort of relax and not focus too much on the details.
We know, obviously, Formula One drivers have to stay hydrated. It's something we've spoken about on F1 Explains an awful lot. Obviously, fluid is heavy, Dan. Water is heavy, and drivers have to be under that certain weight limit, as we mentioned earlier in the interview. Far From Malaysia asks, do trainers have to monitor how much fluid drivers take on board to make sure they don't end up over the weight limit?
It's a good question. It's a good consideration. We do like to try and monitor how much has gone in, but probably for the opposite reason, to make sure that they're adequately hydrated rather than are they going to be overweight. Generally speaking, there is an agreed weight that drivers and engineers or drivers in the team will agree on at the beginning of the season. And so as long as we are sticking to our processes, then there's not that much need to worry about making weight sort of week on week, because we know what's coming. I think when we go back to previous generations of drivers, I think I remember reading maybe David Coulthard's biography or autobiography, and the struggle that he had having to almost making weight some weekends, a little bit like a jockey or a boxer would. It's not so much the case anymore. It's a great consideration. It is something we consider, but it's if you're professional and you're on top of everything anyway, and you're looking after the details, you're being overweight from a fluid point of view isn't something that we consider too much. I will add, if there's an upgrade or something coming, it's going to affect the weight of the car. We probably know that in advance, and that will get communicated. And so we've got a bit of time to factor that in. But no, we tend not to worry too. I'd never really ask a driver to intentionally under fuel or under hydrate, certainly under hydrate.
And our final listener question for you, Dan, is from Harry, originally from Leicester, now lives in Newcastle in the UK. Harry says, I'd like to know what supplements F1 drivers use. For example, I know creatine is well used by many to promote strength and a healthy body composition. But of course, that supplement comes with added weight gain through water retention. So is that something which F1 drivers avoid? Let's do that in two parts, Dan. Firstly, just remind us what a supplement is in basic terms, and then as I say, what do they take, and what about that particular one in creatine, for example?
Yeah, so I mean, so a supplement is exactly as hopefully the word suggests. It's something that we would have in addition to a good diet or balanced diet, where we can get a nutrient from a single pill quite often, a pill or a little shot or a little drink, in the absence of real food. The approach that I take is food first, but not necessarily sort of food only. So if I can ever get the nutrient that we're talking about from a food source, we will always go down that route first. So I'll rarely suggest getting a nutrient from a supplement if it's physically and realistically possible to get it from food, which 95%+ of nutrients that I'm looking to get into any driver or any person, you can do. There's a small number of nutrients that you can't. It's impossible to get the required amount or the optimal amount for performance, at least, from food alone. Creatine is one of those. You get that from red meat, but to get the desired amount, so per day, you're looking to get somewhere between 3 to 5 grams in. If you were to try and get that from beef, I'm not joking when I say this, you'd have to eat probably 3/4 of an entire cow to get that amount into your body. So it's not going to happen, and that'd be every day. So the only way to get that in is through some supplementation. And creatine is one, so we don't avoid it, to answer Harry's question. What we wouldn't do is do what strength and power athletes often do with it, where they'll take a lot at once. So they'll take 20 grams a day, which is, you know, 5 to 7 times the recommended amount, for like 7 days, and then they'll go to the normal dose. What we tend to do with drivers is go on the lower dose, so 3 grams per day, and just do that consistently, and more so for the cognitive benefits rather than the musculoskeletal benefits. They're not power athletes, but there's also this brain and cognitive benefits to using creatine, and that's the reason why we do use it and we don't avoid it. Other supplements that I might use, again, because you can't get it from the diet, so vitamin D, iron, omega-3. But these are based on blood tests. We're in a very fortunate position where we can afford to have blood tests every now and again. So 4, 5, 6 times, it depends how much time we've got in the calendar spare, we'll do blood tests periodically. And if those tests suggest that we're low or we're getting low, again, we'll address it with the diet. But if we can't address it with the diet, we will use a supplement to just put it back where it needs to be.
A really good question from Harry, and also a good example with that particular supplement. Just a final add-on from Harry. He says, I work in nutrition and would love to work in sport and would like to know how he can get a job working with F1 drivers. Any advice for anyone who's listened to what you do and like me, Dan, thinks this is fascinating, this is something I'd like to do for a career?
You can. Getting into F1 is a journey. I mean, I'm sure this is right for every aspect of F1. So journalism including, it's a journey. You don't just arrive in F1 on day one of your career. So I'd say these three bits probably, I guess, knowing what excellent looks like from in our case, a nutrition point of view, and being able to evidence that you've done that somewhere else is really important. So when you come into F1, they're usually looking for someone that knows what they're doing. They've got the history to back it up. Networking's huge. The world of sport in general, not just motorsport, is very small and very fluid. So if you demonstrate in that excellence some way, it will get recognized and word spreads. And motorsport, like any other sport, is a pyramid, and F1 is at the tip of that pyramid. So work in other categories as well, whether that's karting, whether that's the junior formulas, whether that's endurance racing, whatever it is, understand the culture, the DNA of the sport, in addition to the nutrition specific stuff. And it's all about preparation for that. If that opportunity comes up, if you've ticked those three boxes, you're in a pretty solid place.
Dan, really enjoyed getting this insight from you, and next time me and Katie are sat with a Formula One driver and a banana smoothie's bought out, we're going to know exactly why. Now we've got such added insight. So thanks, Dan, really appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you for your questions. Thank the fans for the questions, and hope to speak again soon.
That was Dr. Dan Martin from Combine Performance talking to our very own Christian. Now I love that he loved our listeners' questions as much as we did. That is so fun, so wonderful.
Listeners, you're on your A game there. Dr. Dan was very, very impressed with you about all those questions. He loved that. He actually said at one point, it was like, these aren't made up by you guys. It was like, no. these are genuinely, our listeners are such a curious bunch. They're amazing and some of the best in the world. And no, they wanted to know all of this sort of thing. So no, well done, F1 Explains listeners. You've actively impressed one of our big paddock experts. It's fantastic. Yeah. Top work, everyone. Well done. Give yourselves a pat on the back.
Yes, please do. And Christian, I do have slightly important information here. Christian asked Dan what Oscar Piastri was having for dinner on the day that the interview was recorded. Well, afterwards, Dan went and checked the diet plan.
This is major. This is such breaking news. You do not get this on any other F1 media. There is no other Formula One media telling you what Oscar Piastri had for his dinner on a particular day.
And we can exclusively reveal what he had. He had two pieces of baked salmon.
Lovely.
Jasmine rice.
Hang on, I have a question. What's jasmine rice? Do you know?
Oh, you know what? Someone email us to let us know. I get a little bit, it's not quite right, white rice, but it's not quite like brown rice. And sometimes I think it has flakes in it.
Good
knowledge,
I didn't
know that. But
there's
probably a reason that it's called jasmine, and I don't think it's herbal or aromatic.
Sounds like it could have been an email we've had in. We've had a question
Clearly,
from Jasmine Rice.
I cover motorsport. I don't cover food. I'd love to, but if someone knows, let us know.
We've had an email from Jasmine Rice. She asks, no, it's a food. Right, fine. Carry on.
Jasmine rice and some oven roasted red onion mixed with red peppers, tomatoes, followed by some mixed berries.
I need to pick you up on something here, Katie. We've got a script in front of us that says what Oscar had for dinner that producer Chris has prepared. You left out the word piccolino tomatoes. Was that because you were going to struggle with the name piccolino?
Because there'd be obviously somebody who would come back and tell me what jasmine rice is and how to say piccolino tomato accurately.
Katie ducked it. I don't know if I've said piccolino right. I don't know what piccolino tomatoes are. I don't know the difference between a regular
tomato.
No, but
if you're going to tell us what jasmine rice is, if you could also tell us what piccolino tomatoes are. He also had Greek yogurt and honey for dessert.
Oh, I like Greek yogurt and honey. Okay, so any chefs amongst us, F1explains at F1.com. We'd like to know what jasmine rice is and what piccolino tomatoes are. Now, before we go, we've had a few shout-outs. Hello to Anna in Sweden, Stig in Denmark, Panagiotis from Greece, and Mehdi in Virginia, who've all emailed recently. If you've sent us a question, by the way, which we haven't answered yet, please bear with us. We've got loads to get through. Producer Chris reads every single email. He's so good. He passes them on to Katie and
he
I.
He also does.
We love reading them. And don't think we're doing like the TV presenter thing. And we love to get your messages. We genuinely do.
No, we genuinely do.
We do read them.
You should see our WhatsApp group.
Oh, we get so many nice messages. And we really appreciate you getting in touch. We really do. So do keep sending the questions in because we will get to them. We're not going anywhere. And by the way, it's a long F1 season. We're until December.
Right.
We need the questions. So keep sending them in.
Do send your voice note or an email to F1explains@F1.com. We do promise we'll get the right person in the paddock to answer your question. We can't promise we'll always be having lunch while we're doing it, though. I mean, we still have a plate of food over here.
Can't promise we'll always be having the spinach ricotta ravioli, which I personally think is a shame. However, if you like this episode, you will love the one we did on why F1 drivers have to be so fit. We have four-time world champion Sebastian Vettel's trainer on that episode, plus the ex-F1 driver and friend of Katie Osborne, Alex Rossi.
There's so much more behind the scenes and insight on F1.com, on F1 TV, and on F1's other official pods, F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Nation. Hit subscribe on this feed for new episodes every Friday of F1 Explains. And if you've got an F1 fanatical friend who wants to learn more about the sport, or here's what I like, just have a conversation about F1. Sometimes you just need to talk it out.
Yeah, send them our way. Me and Katie are back next Friday. Katie, if you'll excuse me, I think what I'm going to do now is eat the rest.
Wait, did you get an extra fork for me?
No, I didn't. I'll go get an extra fork. You end the episode. Okay, bye-bye now.
Episodes every Friday. We'll be chatting with you next week as well. For Christian and I both, bye for now.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.